This is Talk Radio 680 WCBM. Time now for the Outdoorsman Radio Show with your host, Alan Ellis.
Hey, good morning, everyone. Alan Ellis here. More of the Outdoorsman Radio Show. We hope you enjoyed that last hour with Tracy Groves talking about turkey season. Tis the season. It's spring, and that also means striped bass, tied for the trophy rockfish season. And we're joined this morning by Harry Hornick with Maryland Department of Natural Resources Fisheries Service. Harry, what's your title?
I'm a fisheries ecologist, a fisheries biologist with, Maryland DNR Fisheries Service.
Okay. Well,
and, run the striped bass program, basically.
I got you. Okay. Well, that's you're the man of the hour then, with the season coming in next Saturday.
There's a bunch of people of the hour right now. I mean, a lot of people involved with striped bass monitoring and the biological studies that Maryland puts into striped bass. You've got the whole striped bass project, and just like I said, there's a lot of great people that work on that. And then you've got the natural resource police that are out there trying to enforce the laws and keep everybody safe.
Everybody safe and happy, that's for sure. Yep.
And then monitor the stock, too.
We're not necessarily going to talk about technique here today. We're going to talk about the biology and the research and the management of striped bass so that people can understand what goes into giving us this unique, I call it, unique fishery here in the world as far as being able to fish for spawning striped bass on the largest estuary, like I said, in the world for striped bass, right here on our own Chesapeake Bay here in Maryland. And right now you're telling me that you've got teams of biologists out there monitoring these fish as they come in the bay. Is that right?
Yes. Yeah, so we have boats out on the upper Potomac and on the upper Chesapeake Bay area, like two of the major spawning areas in Maryland.
Mm-hmm.
Virginia people are also out there. They're doing their monitoring down in Virginia waters, but we do ours up in these areas. The upper bay is basically off of south of Turkey Point, pretty much off of Aberdeen Proving Grounds. And on the Potomac, we're kind of a little bit north of Quantico, north of the power lines on the Potomac. The boats are out there. And what they do is they set out experimental drift gill nets that are 10 different mesh sizes, ranging from 3-inch to 10-inch mesh, and they pretty much cover the entire size range of striped bass that come into the bay, to spawn.
This is one net that has all the different mesh sizes.
What's a series of nets? I mean, it's a fairly long. It's 1,500 feet long, the whole array that goes out in these two areas.
Okay.
And it's been, it's pretty much standardized between, both areas. It is standardized, and it's something that we've been doing since 1985.
Right.
Refined it a little bit. But, again, it has different mesh sizes that, each one, targets a
different year class of a fish.
Exactly. Or actually a couple different year classes, but
okay.
It pretty much covers the whole, the whole range of striped bass. I mean, we've encountered striped bass that were over 20 years old easily, and our surveys indicate, it's anything from a 2-year-old to a 19-year-old or very.
Wow.
And we know they get up to age 30. They can get up as old as age 30, but of course there's fewer of those.
Sure.
But it's still kind of an amazing life history story there of these fish.
And these fish, spawn and leave and come back and spawn year after year. It's pretty amazing. Now, are these catch and release surveys, or are these fish collected, basically sacrificed for their data?
Most of these fish are not sacrificed. I mean, there are different specific surveys that we've done in the past. Sometimes, the university may need fish, when we're studying fecundity, we're looking at the numbers of eggs that some of these fish have. We every once in a while we'll do that, and what we try to do is actually get them from the fishery from the trophy season,
right?
Fish that have been harvested. But this particular survey, we're trying to get fish, we're trying to measure fish. We put the U.S. Fish and Wildlife coordinated tags, the little pink tags that people sometimes come across. We're putting those out this time of year.
Okay.
So our goal during this survey is to get them back overboard, and hopefully somebody recaptures them later and turns in those tags.
Turns in the tag.
The information is very important to us. I can't plug that enough.
Right. So this is a pink. Is this a belly tag?
Yes. It's that Floy tag is the term. It's just the biologists. Basically they become surgeons out there. They make a small incision.
Right.
Insert the tag, and each fish has its own, kind of like its driver's license number. It has its own, specific serial,
right.
In sequence number that, we know 10, 15, 20 years from now somebody catches one of those fish. And the tag's on the external part of the fish, and then there's actually a little button inside of the fish,
mm-hmm.
that, you know, say when somebody harvests a fish and they fillet it, you know, they might still find that little button, which will have the same number. And,
right.
You know, again, you can kind of track the, you know, migration, when
sure.
it was caught, you know, how big it was when it was tagged, you know, how old it was. And, you know, also at this time of year, the Dave Secor at the Chesapeake Biological Lab in Maryland, he is doing more of an advanced tagging where it's almost like sonic tags. Like they can be picked up by specific, you know, stations in the bay that then can determine, hey, this fish crossed here, this fish is headed this direction. You know, kind of a neat, more advanced kind of tagging study.
That's very cool.
Yeah.
Now, when we talk about, first of all, you said one word, fecundity, which people have no clue what that means. I don't even know. So you'll have to explain that. But I just want to clarify on these tagged fish. This is what I call the spaghetti tag, like the diamond, like the Diamond Jim wears a chartreuse spaghetti tag or a bright green spaghetti tag. And then these fish have a pink tag that's a U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service tag that people are also urged to report if they catch one of these fish.
Yes, because there's many more of the pink tags, the pink streamer tags that are out there.
Right.
Other states are putting out the exact same tag, you know, different numbers. So, you know, the Diamond Jim tag is, you know, we also collect information from that, but there's a lot more of these other tags put out.
Well, sure.
And so that's, you know, this is a hardcore research, you know, research effort on many of the coastal states.
Sure.
That is coordinated by U.S. Fish and Wildlife, and like I said, it provides a lot of information over a long period of time for, you know, for a striped bass that's tagged.
Right. Well, look, I'm sure you lived through the moratorium back under Governor Schaefer, and consequently the declaration that the fishery was declared, you know, this is a recovered fishery. Okay.
1995, right.
Right. This is a recovered fishery. So that's 1995. This is going into 2014. That's almost 20 years now we've had fish. Why all the effort?
I'm sorry?
Why all the effort?
Being the effort for?
For management, for research, for, I mean, I understand that biologists have to have something to do. But if we've got a recovered fishery, why all the effort?
Well, you know, it's funny. I mean, you say it was recovered. It's had its ups and downs. You know, you still read about doom and gloom for other areas. I mean, people saying, hey, you know, the fishery's not the way it was. I mean, there have been changes, you know, in the fishery on a coastal basis. And even though some areas, you know,
I guess that was an unfair question. And the reason it was I put it like that is because we have such an emphasis on striped bass here in the bay because it is not only a recreational fish, and it's a big deal when the trophy season comes in, and all year long, all summer long. I mean, we have the charter industry is based on primarily on the striped bass. We have a commercial industry that's based on the striped bass for the most part, and it's a fish that is used for a variety of different things, recreational, commercial, however you want to classify charter boats, whether that's recreational, commercial, or a combination of both. The focus is on our state fish, the rockfish, the striped bass. And, you know, we do have this unique estuary here, this unique spawning grounds for coast fish that travel up and down the entire East Coast. And, you know, when I said, what's all the effort? I mean, In the November Saltwater Sportsman, for example, one of the writers, I think Restory wrote an article about, hey, best time to catch a 50-pound striped bass. You know, they're headed out now, and there's 50,
headed down the coast.
Headed down the coast. There's 50-pounders out there. They're full of roe. They're getting, you know, and you can catch a 50-pounder at the mouth of the Chesapeake Bay in Virginia. And I'm thinking,
wow.
Yeah, you can.
Yep.
You know, and that fishery is just, to me, that winter fishery, and I'm not taking anything against anybody that wants to go out and catch 50-pound striped bass, but those fish get hammered from the time they reach 18 inches, for the most part, till the time they die and they're, you know, 18, 20 years old.
Right.
And, you know, when I said, why all the effort?
That's the effort. That's why you put that effort into it. I mean, it is a very important fishery, and it's a very large fishery. And on a coastal basis, I mean, you're looking at, you know, millions of pounds of fish that are harvested, commercially and recreationally, and more so recreationally. I mean, there's this tremendous amount of recreational fishing and recreational effort, you know, which includes, you know, catch and release and the regular
right.
standard, you know, catch and keep,
yep.
you know, on the recreational side. And that's, you know, that's why, I mean, in some ways, you know, the biologists, like in Maryland, you know, people say, oh, you've got too many biologists. You know, we have fewer biologists, you know, working now on striped bass than we did, say, 20 years ago,
sure.
you know, right after, the, you know, right during the moratorium, right after the moratorium. I mean, a lot of the same work is being done. I mean, a lot of the same surveys are being done, like the spring survey. You know, the recreational monitoring, you know, we've gotten better at doing some of these things. And again, because it is such an important fishery, and, you know, again, like, recreational is recreational. Charter is, like you said, it's kind of a combination, you know, do you call it commercial, do you call it recreational?
Right.
To, you know, to the recreational fisherman on a charter boat, that's recreational. And
right.
that's, you know, they definitely provide a good service to, you know, their clients, you know, whether they're from the state of Maryland or, you know, and if you want to look at marketing, you know, it's nice that people can come from out of state and enjoy Maryland's benefits. I mean, I know a lot of people, you know, drive down from the Philadelphia area,
sure.
Westchester, Harrisburg,
yep.
and it's funny to think that people in Pennsylvania, oh, I just pop down to the Bay, because where I grew up in northeastern Pennsylvania, or northwestern PA, I mean, you know, Maryland was like a foreign country, you know.
Exactly.
You didn't go down there, but for people that live near the border of Maryland, there's a lot of opportunities that they can't get anywhere else.
Gotcha.
You know, they can't get in their state, anything like this striped bass fishery, and so it is kind of a big deal.
Sure, it's a huge deal. That,
yeah.
I mean, I was kind of, you know, poking you a little bit. Well, you know, why all the effort? But
oh yeah, I mean,
you
and,
know,
yeah, and you know, you've been around this long enough, you know what goes on, and again, the people catching those big 50-pound fish. I mean, we'll see some of them in our surveys, and we hope to put a tag in them.
Sure,
and get them out there. Just like. You know, try to get a tag in them, and, you know, maybe that fish will be at liberty a few more years.
That's
what we try to do.
Sure.
So,
well,
it's a unique, you know, I mean, the other thing is, you know, I think I said, you know, we have fish in the bay at certain times of the year that are, you know, some fish are coming up on a year old, and some fish might be 30 years old.
Exactly.
That are coming into the bay to spawn.
And that's what makes the Chesapeake Bay so unique, is because we have all these fish
yeah.
concentrated
yep.
coming here. I mean, there's got other spawning grounds along the coast, but, you know, we're worldwide acclaim, worldwide recognition.
Chesapeake Bay is the biggest one. I mean, there's variations. You know, some people say, well, it's, you know, 70-80%. You know, other people say, well, it's 90%. I mean, and it probably changes as the stock, you know, nothing is ever the same from one day to the next. But
right.
Chesapeake Bay, Virginia and Maryland is like the main spawning grounds for, you know, for the East Coast.
Yeah, we got it. I
yeah.
mean, there's no denying
yeah.
we're it. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. You know, you've got other, you know, portions of the population from, you know, in New York and in Delaware Bay and, you know, the North Carolina, off North Carolina. But like I said, Maryland, not Maryland, but Chesapeake Bay is the, you know, is a large producer area.
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
I know this is a kind of a question that, and we're not going to have time to answer it here. We're going to take a break here shortly. But
okay.
The question that I want to ask you next is, what's the peak spawn of striped bass in the Chesapeake Bay? Is it based on water temperature? Is it based on, photo period? Is it, you know, amount of daylight? What's it based on? And then we'll go from there. I had a listener email me last week when I was on the air, that was on the 5th, that said he could smell the fish on the chop tank. They were already spawning.
Yeah.
And I've
yeah.
heard, you know, I've heard that you can see the milt floating on the top of the water. You can smell the fish and that type of thing.
Yeah.
And that's not uncommon, but that's where we're going to go when we come back from the break, and what the peak spawn, where they are now, and what we can expect for the upcoming trophy season that comes in next Saturday. So that's where we'll be after the break. But let me tell the folks right now about Clyde Sports Shop, 2307 Hammonds Ferry Road in Lansdowne, just off Beltway Exit 9. They are loaded for stripers, no question about it. They've got all the bucktails and the parachutes and the umbrella rigs. They've got the trolling rods and reels. They can put fresh line on your trolling reel if you like, if that's the way you like to fish for striped bass. Of course, they handle all types of fishing. I mean, anything from panfish to trout to rockfish, they've got it all, and all the tackle to go with it. They can fix your rod and reel. They can fix your, you know, and put a tip on your rod, whether it's a roller tip guide or just a tip, a guide. They can resurface your reels. They can fill them with fresh line. You name it. Clyde Sports Shop is your headquarters for fishing. They've got all the live bait you can need, want, or imagine for anything from freshwater to the perch run. Clyde Sports Shop also has a 24/7 365 fishing hotline, and I'll give you that in a minute. But Clyde's is located, again, off Beltway Exit 9 on Hammonds Ferry Road, 2307, and they're your full-line fish and tackle dealer. They do have a fishing hotline, 247-3474. 247-FISH is that 24-hour hotline. That's a 410 area code in front of that. You can check that out. Check out their website, ClydeSports.com. They're open 7 days a week for fishermen and hunters. Been around since 1957. Check them out, Clyde Sports Shop. We'll be right back after this. If you enjoy decoy collecting and great wildlife art, waterfowl hunting, or a scenic walk along the bay, it's time for the 33rd Annual Decoy and Wildlife Art Festival at the Havre de Grace Decoy Museum. This year's event is Friday evening, May 2nd, Saturday, May 3rd, and Sunday, May 4th. Admission is only $8 for the weekend. Over 120 exhibitors and artists display paintings and prints, sculptures and carvings, photography, and sportsmen's collectibles. The family-friendly festival has great food and lots to see and do. The annual live auction is 5:30 p.m. on Saturday at the Activity Center. Free shuttle buses run between the museum, the middle school, and the Activity Center. Learn about the great hunting traditions of the Chesapeake Bay at the Decoy and Wildlife Art Festival at the Havre de Grace Decoy Museum on May 2nd, 3rd, and 4th. For more information, visit decoymuseum.com or call 410-939-3739. See you at the Decoy Festival. This is Alan Ellis for Linex Spray-On Bedliners. Bay Linex of Glen Burnie and Catonsville Linex are proud to provide outstanding customer service just like their number one rated Linex Spray-On Bedliners with a nationwide lifetime warranty. A Linex Spray-On Bedliner completely seals out water, meaning no rust. It has a durable non-slip surface and is impervious to fuels and harsh chemicals, deer blood, crab juice, and it protects against impact and abrasion from tree stands, tools, and all the other junk you carry in your truck bed. It's easy to clean at the local car wash. Bay Linex of Glen Burnie and Catonsville Linex now offer the new Linex Premium that looks better and lasts longer. Bay Linex of Glen Burnie, located at 400 Arundel Corporation Road, just off Beltway Exit 3A. Call 410-789-0199. That's 410-789-0199. And Catonsville Linex is located at 5617 Baltimore National Pike, inside Beltway Exit 15A. Call 410-455-0800. That's 410-455-0800. Protect your investment, your pickup truck, like I did with a Linex Spray-On Bedliner. W&W Tire and Auto Service in Finksburg is taking care of my trucks for over 25 years. Anything from a simple oil change to extensive engine work, brakes, tune-ups, everything. Their motto is, we do it. Bridgestone and Firestone tires for pickups, SUVs, and commercial vehicles. Large trucks, motorhomes, even diesel engines are no problem. W&W Tire and Auto Service on Route 140, 3233 Baltimore Boulevard in Finksburg. Look for the big American flag. Call for an appointment, 410-833-8410. W&W Tire and Auto. If you enjoy gardening, I always recommend Schellinger's Papa John's Farm in Severn, just off I-97. Papa John's greenhouses are bursting with beautiful plants and flowers. Annuals by the pack or flat, and perennials by the pot. Bedding plants, planters, and hanging baskets, too. Colorful pansies, impatiens, and petunias. They even carry the proven winter specialty plants. Papa John's Farm has all the vegetable plants, too, ready to plant in your home garden. Tasty tomatoes, squash, onions, watermelon, cantaloupe, 10 varieties of hot peppers and herbs, too. Papa John's Farm, just off I-97 at Exit 12. That's 8029 New Cut Road in Severn. You can drive right to the greenhouses to make your selections or call 410-969-5909. Think about flowers and plants from Papa John's for your garden or for your church. Easter's April 20th. Mother's Day's coming soon, May 11th. Call 410-969-5909. Papa John's is open every day. Visit Schellinger's Papa John's Farm. It'll grow on you. It's time for the 2014 Maryland Fishing Challenge. You could win great prizes like the grand prize boat motor and trailer rig from Bass Pro Shop or thousands in tackle from Bill's Outdoor Center and prizes from sponsors like the World Fishing Network and Under Armour. New this year is an invasive species award for those catching blue catfish, flathead catfish, and northern snakeheads. And check out the new Maryland Youth Fishing Club and the Youth Angler's Log to learn how your youngster can win a guided fishing trip. From now through Labor Day, all you have to to do is go fishing. If you're lucky enough to catch a Maryland citation-sized fish or crab and certify your catch, you're in. It's that easy. There are more than 60 species of fish in freshwater, tidal rivers, Chesapeake Bay, and on the Atlantic coast that qualify. So stop by your local fishing citation center, check the fishing rule book, or visit www.dnr.maryland.gov for all the details in the 2014 Maryland Fishing Challenge and the Angler Award Program. That's www.dnr.maryland.gov. Are you feeling lucky?
We're back with Harry Hornick, a biologist and fisheries ecologist from the Maryland Department of Natural Resources Fisheries Service. And we're talking about striped bass with the season coming in next Saturday, the trophy season. Harry was telling us that they're out doing some surveys right now. They've got some gill nets out there fishing for striped bass with the gill nets. Catch and release, but you're basically...
make sure to clarify that.
Yeah, catch and release. You're catching fish just, what, getting ready to spawn, just staging for the spawning area? Is that where they are, Harry, or are they actually doing it?
Yeah, well, they're not spawning yet. The water temperature that they spawn at, they really won't start spawning until it's about 52 degrees, the water temperature. And right now, it's about 49 in the... on the spawning grounds in the Potomac. Again, it's been going up, the last few days,
right.
From it was, 46 just a few days ago. But once it starts getting in like the mid-50s, we'll start seeing, a lot of spawning activity. Right now the fish that the biologists are encountering, Eric Drell on the Potomac and his crew, and Beth Versack on the Upper Bay and her crew, they're big. The females are big and fat. The males are, running a little bit of milk, but they're not, you can tell they're just not, they're not nearly ready to spawn yet.
Right.
And again, the way this survey is done, I mean, it's like random. There's like a random survey design where these, they sample at different spots that are, randomly chosen to not bias, we're picking a spot. We're,
right.
Picking a good spot and only going there. I mean, it, like I said, it's a survey. And over the course of, since 1985, it evens out. We have a good random sample, an objective look at, the population. And that's what we're trying to do. And
right. Okay.
Like I said, they're out there. They're definitely out there now.
Trick question. I don't know if it's a trick question or not. All right. They're just getting ready to spawn. The water temperature is not quite where it needs to be. We've got a week to go till the season comes in.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. What is the effect... Do we know what the effect is when we're out there trolling for those big trophy striped bass and we're either pre-spawn or post-spawn? I mean, let's say they haven't spawned yet and we're catching them and taking them out of there. Are we hurting the fishery?
I personally believe we're not hurting the fishery. I mean, there's been a lot of studies done on this, or maybe not enough studies. There's people that believe both sides of that. Okay, these fish are they talk about fallback behavior, like the fish that are caught on the spawning grounds, they may fall back down on the spawning grounds, and then you get into the issue of okay, do they return to spawn? I know from our surveys we tag fish, while they're spawning, we pull them out in experimental drift gill nets, we measure them, take scale samples, put a tag in them, and put that fish back overboard, and we've had recaptures from those tags, later on in the season, and later on, of course, later on in, maybe years later.
Right.
But,
we don't know if that spawn that particular year, and we've talked about this, but we don't know if that particular, who did we talk about a couple weeks ago?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. We talked about this with, Keith Lockwood. We don't necessarily know that if we're doing those surveys or stressing those fish during the spawn, whether when you return them they actually spawn. And I think you and I talked about this off the air, that surveys have been done about fish want to spawn. I mean, they're
right.
No matter what kind of stress they've been through,
right.
the goal is to lay those eggs and get them fertilized and spawn.
Right. They've spent, they spent this whole winter, getting fat, growing, growing the eggs. The females are growing eggs. The males producing milk. So, again, even though they may be stressed, and that's why I said, I personally believe that most of them probably spawn, because again, they've invested so much effort, growing, physiological effort, that it just makes no sense to get up there and not spawn. I just believe that. I mean, again, that's not for every individual fish, but I think in general, they still will spawn.
Right.
Again, our surveys, we're handling them when they're spawning, and we put them back over, and you know.
And you hope they spawn, and you think they do.
Yes, I think they do. Okay. I think they do. I mean, you know, again, there's probably an exception. In all the time, we're learning more and more about striped bass. You know, we think we know a lot, and we do know a lot about striped bass. You know, it's one of the most heavily studied and managed fish on the East Coast.
And we continue to have people that want to continue to study them and continue to hold you accountable, to hold the department accountable and everything else for, you know, for a fish that migrates up and down the East Coast. You're responsible for every single one of them, according to some people.
Well, and we're trying to do the best job we can. I mean, and again, you've got groups like the Atlantic States Marine Fisheries Commission, which, you know, they're tasked with monitoring every state and every state. And, you know, some states do more, some states may do less. But, you know, their job is, you know, their task is to coordinate everybody's efforts and you know, and try to do, you know, try to maintain the population on a, you know, on a coastal basis, you know, because it is so highly migratory. I mean, we know these fish, you know, we can tag a fish and it could be caught, you know, up off the coast of New England, almost up into Canada. I mean, they just swim tremendous distances and are, you know, encountered by a lot of different people up and down the East Coast.
Sure.
Yes.
You know. Yeah, they have to run the gauntlet, don't they?
Yeah, they do. They do. And many, you know, many times people argue, why do we have a, you know, why do we have a season on them? Why, you know, you guys said you harvested, you know, 44,000 fish last year, and that's terrible. And it's like, that's a drop in the bucket compared to what goes on up in New England. I mean, you know, during the summer and fall.
Right.
I mean, as far as like numbers of fish. So, you know, this spring season gives, you know, it's designed, it starts late, you know, late enough that some fish are going to spawn. You know, the ones that spawn in like the first peak, you know, they're going to head out of town. I mean, they're going to head down the bay and be gone, and then they're not available to, you know, Maryland fishermen.
Right.
And that's, you know, again, we're trying to balance, you know, letting some survive and, you know, allowing Maryland fishermen and charter boat captains to, you know, to get a chance at some of these fish that once they leave here, everybody else has, you know, a chance at them.
Sure.
Depending on what the regulations and seasons are.
I got you. All right. So we got this trophy season coming in. A fish has got to be 28 inches to keep. Is that correct?
Correct. Yes.
All right. What's how old is that fish?
That the 28-inch fish is at least five. Like in our surveys, we're looking at, in this fishery, you know, fish that are anywhere from 5 to 19 years old.
Right.
That were encountered last year. Now, we're not, you know, of course, you know, they're all a year older this year.
Right.
So, you know, some of the smallest, you know, the 28-inch fish, there's going to be some of those that are, are five-year-old fish that are, you know, growing very fast. They're larger, you know. Each year class of fish has, you know, has the runts and has the big boys.
I got you.
Just like kids.
Yeah, they're not all the same size.
You may get three triplets kids and they all weigh different, you know, different heights. Usually they're close, but that's kind of how it is. I mean, the fish, you know, each year class of fish, you know, some grow faster than others.
Right.
So last year, the majority of the fish were like 9 and 10 years old, which are from the 2003 year class and the 2004 year classes. And, you know, probably half, you know, well, it was over half of the fish last year were from those 2 year classes.
Okay.
And, you know, the 1 year class, the 2003 year class, I mean, that was like a large juvenile index number. It was a large year class.
What year was that?
That was 2003.
Okay.
It was a good year class. But what's kind of interesting is that, you know, the year class that is the 2004 year class, it was kind of an average year class. But yet that, you know, those numbers of fish that were spawned in you know, 2004, they're contributing heavily to this fishery. I mean, there's a lot of fish there, of course, and then a lot of fish from, you know, from the dominant year class of 2003. So, and again, you've got fish, you know, the majority of the fish are like between 9 years old and 12 years old, which is you know, you're looking at fish that are like, you know, 34, 35, 36, 37 inches in length. That was like the dominant size of fish in last year.
Okay.
This coming year, you know, those fish are going to grow. Those fish are going to grow. Last year, you know, the average fish last year was over 36 inches.
Really?
Which was bigger than like in 2012 when they were 34 inches. So,
okay.
you're probably going to see a larger fish caught this year. I can't tell you the actual number.
Right, sure.
But like I said, you've got two major year classes of fish that they're growing. I mean,
big spawn in 2003, average in 2004, but these fish are the ones that are, would you call them the prime spawners, basically? I mean, you know, a 20-year-old fish is not going to Well, I don't know. The way I understand it, the older fish carry more eggs. Is that right?
Yes, it is.
So if you've got a 20-year-old fish, it's got way more eggs than a 5-year-old fish.
They weigh more. They will be much, you know, much bigger. I mean,
sure, obviously, but I mean, as far as numbers of eggs is what I'm getting at. In other words, if you've got a 28-inch fish, it may have, I don't have any number, 75,000 eggs, let's say. If you got a fish that's 40 inches long, it's going to have 200,000 eggs. I mean,
it's more than that. Like, say, you know, average 6-year-old fish, okay. 6-year-old female, they might have, you know, 500,000 eggs, actually.
Okay.
And we've done studies to count, you know, to count these, to get these numbers.
Right.
So, say we're looking at 500,000 eggs.
Right.
You look at a fish that's, say, 15 to 20 years old, they're like 2 or 3 million eggs.
Really?
Possibly, yes. And if you've ever seen, like, you know, those large, you know, a 40-inch rockfish.
Yeah.
I mean, that's going to be, you know, in that range of you know, over 2 million eggs. So
wow. Let me stop you there. What's our sex ratio in the harvest? Well, I mean, obviously, like every fish species, the females are bigger than the males.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So what's our sex ratio in the trophy season? What are we harvesting? Do you know?
And in the trophy season harvest, like say again last year.
Mm-hmm.
88% of the fish are female.
88% are female.
88% of the fish are female.
Okay. Of that 88% that were female, how many had spawned and how many had not spawned?
This past year, 29% had not spawned.
Okay.
Which means that 71% of the fish caught last year that we sampled. I mean, and again, we have another survey where we go out and, you know, we're at the charter docks, that, you know,
yeah,
monitoring charter boats and
right,
private anglers.
Right.
You know, so we're basically looking at fish that people have caught, they've killed, they brought them back.
Right.
They've been sacrificed.
Yeah.
You know, we can still get a lot of information, and this is the kind of information we're getting,
sure,
from them, is that, hey, did that fish spawn? You know, hey, did that fish, you know, was it a male or a female? Which the biologists are, you know, they're very good at determining that.
And, right.
And last year, it was 88% of the fish were, you know, were females, which again is not a surprise to us.
Okay.
And a pleasant surprise was that, like I said, like 29% had already, you know, had not spawned. That may sound like a lot, but 70% had spawned.
Had spawned,
you know,
yeah. Spawned. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
That's
okay.
Over the course of, you know, course of the season. So, I mean,
sure,
there's still, you know, there's some still, you know, fish are caught with, you know, that hadn't spawned, and, you know, again, our population models take that into account.
Right.
You know, the ASMSC, or, you know, people, you know, working through ASMSC or coordinated by ASMSC, you know, they have that information, and, you know, again, it's still, the way our regulations are set up, they still will, you know, they still allow us to be conservative enough to have, you know, to have a harvest, and it's not going to hurt the population, you know, as a whole.
Right.
You know, again, when looking at it on a coastal basis.
I mean, it's not like two guys are sitting around going, hey, what do you think the season ought to be this year? And how big the fish is? Yeah. I mean, it's not like you guys sit down and do that. I mean, this is the Atlantic States Marine Fisheries Commission. Harry, do you participate in the meetings? I mean, do you contribute to the Atlantic States Marine Fisheries gatherings when they gather twice a year, however often they get there? Do you go?
Yes, I do go.
Okay.
And how it works is, like, Maryland has representatives, has technical representatives. You know, people on my staff are on different meeting groups that, you know, talk about tagging, that talk about biology.
Right.
You know, there's the technical issues that are discussed, age, structure, maturity, and those meetings are like the technical meetings. We provide a lot of, you know, my group provides a lot of information to those, you know, to those meetings.
Right.
And then, of course, then they have the board meetings, which are like more of the administrative staff from Maryland. That would be like Tom McConnell, Lynn Bagley,
right,
Mike Luisi. They go to these meetings. And that's where, you know, that's where, like, okay, these are our options. You know, the technical committee, they have, like, a representative that they summarize the technical information, because it can get overwhelming for the biologist.
No question.
And, you know, you spend the other day, you know, Beth Versack and Angela Giuliano, they spent, like, 4 hours on a conference call.
Right.
Just trying to discuss, you know, some technical issues with striped bass.
Yep.
And that information is given to someone like Tom, who then goes to the meetings and...
Well, according to some people, you guys don't do enough. So, anyway, all right. Hey, we're going to take a short break. Let me do that, and we'll be right back to you. Okay.
Sure.
All right. I got to tell you about Chesapeake Outdoors, ladies and gentlemen. Chesapeake Outdoors is ready for rockfish. I mean, we talked about turkey season last time, and they've got all that: the AVNX decoys, the zinc calls, the turkey shotguns, ammo decoys, camo. They even have the Drake waterfowl clothing is still 40% off on the remaining stock. However, let's talk about rockfish. Rods, reels, and tackle for Chesapeake Bay, the tidal rivers, and freshwater fishing, of course. Again, spool your trolling reels with fresh line. They've got a brand new line winding machine. They've got live and frozen bait. And for trophy rockfish, bucktails and parachutes made by a company right here in Maryland called Spankin' Stripers. They got the Bubba Blade knives if you want to clean them, fillet and release like some people do. And don't forget, they got the largest selection of custom-colored mojos. That's right, those big mojo lures. That's the big trolling baits, 16, 20, even 24 ounces, and trolling weights to match if you like. Chesapeake Outdoors. That's right. They're the first choice for Eastern Shore hunters and anglers. Kent Island's largest selection of fishing and crabbing supplies. Route 50 East. That's exit 39B, Dominion Road on Kent Island. Route 50 East, just after the Bay Bridge, after you cross the bay. 39B is the exit number. Give them a call at 410-604-2500, 604-2500. Stop by, see what they've got, and tell them you heard about it right here on the Outdoors and Radio Show. We'll be right back after this.
This is the Wall Street Journal Report. I'm Jennifer Kishinka. For 5 years, Health and Human Services Secretary Kathleen Sebelius has been a lightning rod for critics of President Obama's health care law. But with signups exceeding expectations and a new face soon to be in charge at the Health Department, the White House is eager to see if the poisonous atmosphere might ease. The president will announce Sebelius' resignation today and nominate his budget director as her replacement. Does taking your car in for repairs make you anxious? You're certainly not alone. Art Shaw of Repair Pal says a new survey shows a trip to the mechanic can be stressful.
Over half of consumers are not only worried about being ripped off when getting their car repaired, but they actually believe they have been ripped off already. So it's a very distressing process for consumers.
Repair Pal helps take some of the anxiety out of the process by providing shop certification. On Wall Street, futures are a little changed after stocks sold off yesterday. The Dow Industrials dropped 267. This is the Wall Street Journal Report.
Hey, sweetie, what's going on?
Well, honey, I have some news.
Okay, what?
All that training paid off. I got the job.
Oh, I knew you would get it. So when do you start?
When you donate stuff to Goodwill, you help provide job training for people right here in your community. Goodwill. Donate stuff. Create jobs. Find your nearest donation center at goodwill.org. A message from Goodwill and the Ad Council.
Attention, diabetics. Is your blood sugar out of control? Nobedes may help dramatically lower your blood sugar.
My name is Kirsten. I'm a type 1 diabetic, and while taking Nobedes, my blood sugar levels dropped from 295 to 115 in just one day. I love Nobedes because it's an all-natural product, and it works.
While Nobedes isn't intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease, it's helped lower many diabetics' blood sugar. Call now for 2 free bottles. Just pay shipping and handling. Call 800-551-9026. That's 800-551-9026.
For great fishing tackle, crabbing supplies, and up-to-date fishing and crabbing information, hey, it's Fishbones Bait and Tackle in Pasadena. To get there, take Route 100 to the end, hop on Mountain Road towards Gibson Island, go 2.5 miles to 4729 Mountain Road. Custom-tied bucktails and trolling lures for rockfish, and all you need for any type of fishing, crabbing, and the best fishing report on the Mid-Bay. Fishbones also carries the best stainless steel crab steamers you'll ever find. Call 410-360-0573, 410-360-0573 for Fishbones Bait and Tackle in Pasadena. If you enjoy decoy collecting and great wildlife art, waterfowl hunting, or a scenic walk along the bay, it's time for the 33rd Annual Decoy and Wildlife Art Festival at the Havre de Grace Decoy Museum. This year's event is Friday evening, May 2nd, Saturday, May 3rd, and Sunday, May 4th. Admission is only $8 for the weekend. Over 120 exhibitors and artists display paintings and prints, sculptures and carvings, photography, and sportsman's collectibles. The family-friendly festival has great food and lots to see and do. The annual live auction is 5:30 p.m. on Saturday at the Activity Center. Free shuttle buses run between the museum, the middle school, and the Activity Center. Learn about the great hunting traditions of the Chesapeake Bay at the Decoy and Wildlife Art Festival at the Havre de Grace Decoy Museum on May 2nd, 3rd, and 4th. For more information, visit decoymuseum.com or call 410-939-3739. See you at the Decoy Festival.
This is Alan Ellis for Linex Spray-On Bedliners. Catonsville Linex and Bay Linex of Glen Burnie are proud to provide outstanding customer service just like their number one rated Linex Spray-On Bedliners with a nationwide lifetime warranty. A Linex Spray-On Bedliner completely seals out water, meaning no rust. It has a durable non-slip surface and is impervious to fuels and harsh chemicals, deer blood, crab juice, and it protects against impact and abrasion from tree stands and tools and all the other junk you carry in your truck bed. It's easy to clean at your local car wash, too. Catonsville Linex and Bay Linex of Glen Burnie now offer the new Linex Premium that looks better and lasts longer. Catonsville Linex is located at 5617 Baltimore National Pike, inside Beltway Exit 15A. Call 410-455-0800. That's 410-455-0800. Bay Linex of Glen Burnie is located at 400 Arundel Corporation Road, just off Beltway Exit 3A. Call 410-789-0199. That's 410-789-0199. Protect your investment, your pickup truck, like I did with a Linex Spray-On Bedliner. Nothing is more frustrating than a dead battery. When your truck won't start or your boat or ATV leaves you stranded far from home, that's not good. The solution is Battery Warehouse. Not only does Battery Warehouse provide batteries for your car or truck, you can find marine batteries for cranking or trolling, ATV batteries, tractor batteries, motorcycle batteries, and batteries for all outdoors equipment. Did you know Battery Warehouse has batteries for wild game feeders, dog collars, cell phones, predator calls, and trail cameras? How about your video camera? Or if you tow your boat or trailer, your trailer brake control battery? Any battery you need. With 10 locations in Central Maryland, there's a Battery Warehouse convenient to you. Bel Air, Frederick, Cockeysville, Glen Burnie, Dundalk, Hagerstown, Westminster, Eldersburg, Parkville, and Woodlawn. Visit BatteryWarehouseMaryland.com online for the phone numbers and more information. When you need a hot flash, get to the Battery Warehouse near you.
If you're a working man and your truck breaks down, you only need to know one repair shop, W&W Tire and Auto Service in Finksburg. They built your reputation on getting you in, fixed, and out the door quickly, efficiently, and a very competitive price. Bridgestone and Firestone tires for pickups, SUVs, and commercial vehicles, large trucks, motorhomes, even diesel engines are no problem. W&W Tire and Auto Service on Route 140, 3233 Baltimore Boulevard in Finksburg. Just look for that big American flag. Call for an appointment, 410-833-8410, W&W Tire and Auto.
Hey, we're back with Harry Hornick, a fisheries biologist who runs the striped bass program here in Maryland. And we were talking about some of the involvement of the Atlantic States Marine Fisheries Commission and the management of striped bass. And we talked a few things about how they survey striped bass. And we're not going to get too deep about that, but we are going to talk about the overall fishery. You know, we did come through a moratorium, a five-year moratorium. And all of a sudden, the 5 years after the moratorium was taken off in '95, I believe you said, maybe that wasn't that long.
No, it was '90 when it was from 1985 to '90.
Right, and then 5 years later, the fishery was declared recovered in '95. Right.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So basically, we had 5 years where we didn't fish those fish commercially or recreationally. Hurt a lot of people back then.
Yes, and charter boat industry.
Exactly. Yeah, sure. And then we had those 5 years of fish that were just basically left alone to do their thing. And 10 years later, the fishery was recovered, correct?
Yes.
Okay. Now, we've got people that are saying, well, we're on the downward trend again. How do you address that when somebody says that? Well, it's not like it was 10 years ago. What do you say to that?
Well, it may not be like it was, say, in 2004, 2005. You know, that was like those fish that were, had got through the moratorium, after the moratorium, after, they were deemed recovered in 1995.
Yeah, the era of recovery, let's call it that.
Era of recovery. Beyond that, I mean, those fish are growing older, being fished upon more heavily. But what's going on now is that we're still so far above what it was in between 1985 and 1990. And as I mentioned earlier, people say, "Oh, you're going to manage it right back into a moratorium." And it's like, "No, that will never happen. That's not the wish of ASMFC. They would never allow that to happen. Maryland certainly doesn't want to, would never let that happen."
But too valuable a fishery.
And it's just like, I mean, I just think that's people, I'm not sure why they say that. I can give reasons, but you probably wouldn't want to bleep me on the air here, but
no, there's
for a family show.
Yeah, that's exactly. Yeah.
But it's frustrating because they say, you know,
you're the guy out there that's fighting for these fish.
And a lot of other people are fighting
and
for
well,
fish.
Exactly. Yeah. Your whole team, I mean, the whole department, I mean, you know, we based the Chesapeake Bay, success of the Chesapeake Bay and recreational angling and commercial fishing is pretty much based on the striped bass.
Yeah.
And so for the detractors that see a little blip in the population or see a downturn in the spawning, you know, you have a bad year class or something like that, you know, they're saying, oh, you're doing this, you're doing that, you're letting charter boats or commercial guys do this and do that. You know, the point is we're so far ahead. You know, yeah, we might have to tweak it.
Yes.
We might have to tweak it down the road. We might look 10 years down the road and go, or 5 years or 2 years and say,
right.
You know what? We got to cut back our trophy season by a week, or we have to, you know, and I'm not putting that out there. We might have to increase the size limit from 28 to 30. I mean, we started out at 36 inches, didn't we?
You mean on the trophy season?
Yeah, on the trophy season.
Yeah, I mean, and it's you know, the last few years it's been, you know, it's stayed at the
28.
28 inches, like since
we had the disastrous slot limit at one point.
2007.
Yeah, and you know, so.
But you know, you mentioned that, you know, things may change, and the thing is the whole strategy for East Coast striped bass management is it's adaptive, it changes. You know, again, we're trying. You know, we're not trying to. I mean, we're not trying to hurt fishermen. We're trying to help fishermen.
Right.
And so, again, you know, there may be changes. I mean, I know there's been, you know, increases in harvest, and then there's going to be a decrease in harvest. And it's like, well, that's as a result of our studies that are ongoing that, you know, say, you know, we're saying, okay, we're taking advantage of this, and we're being cautious with that, you know, this any changes in the population. Yeah. And, you know, again, the like since probably 2000, you know, we've had mostly – you know, one size limit, and
right.
You mentioned you had a couple years where it was different from that. That may change again, or you know, the fall season may change. I mean, that all is like up for discussion yet. That'll be discussed at the May ASMSC meetings,
right.
You know, coming up. So
the goal,
you know,
the
can't
goal,
really say what'll happen, but
the goal is to protect the fishery and make sure that we have the sustainability to carry us through into the future.
Yes, absolutely.
I mean that, you know
and I've said, you know, East Coast striped bass management actually is a success story, and somebody, you know, some fisherman probably just spilt his coffee, and that's baloney.
Yeah.
You know, they're mismanaging it, and it's like, you know what, look at the facts, you know, look at our harvest, look at the harvest up and down the East Coast, you know, that information's available. You know, there have been ups and downs. You know, New England has claimed that, you know, Maryland's doing all this. You know, Maryland's like, well, why can't we catch more fish? Because New England does. I mean, you get in these like little turf battles. But, you know, ASMSC and the biologists are trying to work through it and say,
sure.
You know, there's enough fish for all, and this is how we have to allocate them.
Yeah, exactly.
This is how we have to, you know, manage them to, you know.
And it is management. It's not reacting to the whims of you know, one of the stakeholder groups or another. You look at the species and the sustainability of the species first. And then how we affect them second, is that correct?
Right, correct. I mean we do want input, and you know, all the states take input from their user groups.
Sure.
And you know, everybody certainly has a right to express their views.
But not everybody's right.
But that's a big deal there. I mean, not everybody's right. I mean, they have a lot of the you know, the fishermen, they are very knowledgeable, and they have seen a lot.
No question.
They do know sometimes what they're talking about, but again, sometimes, you know, you're looking at little microcosms. You know, everybody says this thing and everybody says that, but
yeah. I mean, you can't manage a species on emotion either.
Exactly, and it gets hard. I know people have, you know, give them credit. They go to a lot of these ASMSC meetings. You know, some of them go to them on their own pocket. You know, they're paying for it, and
right.
You know, they feel frustrated with the you know, the process is slow, and the process does this, and they didn't listen to me, and it's like they do try to listen to everybody, but
yeah.
It's going through, you know, everybody, and plus looking at the science.
But when you're talking about this big of a geographical area, you're talking about this many jurisdictions involved, state, you know, different states have different commercial needs, different states have different recreational needs. I don't remember how many states are in the Atlantic States Marine Fisheries Commission, but it's, you would know better than I, but you know, you've got all these regulations, all these, you know, and then you get politics involved in the deal, and it gets even more muddy. But as you can attest from this General Assembly this year, and you don't have to comment on that.
Okay, thank you.
No problem. But it gets even more complicated when you get that type of involvement in there, and you know the politicians get involved. So, you know, you guys are doing the heavy lifting on the management end. The biologists, the boots on the ground biologists, they're going for one goal, and you know that you are not going to please everybody all the time. You're not going to completely please the recreational fishermen. You're not going to completely please the commercial fishermen. You're not going to completely please the charter boat fishermen. And I mean, these discussions, trust me, have been going on for many, 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 many years. I mean, I dug out a paper the other day from one of the local organizations that was dated over 20 years ago, Rockfish Game Fish, you know, mm-hmm. that type of thing. And so, you know, the battle among the user groups is probably going to continue, because you're never going to manage it the way everybody thinks you should manage it. And, you know, I just invite people to if, you know, you're going to make a comment, pay attention to the science. And this is me talking here.
Yeah,
you know,
I
know it's your segment, but this is me talking to my compatriots out there, my recreational fishermen. And, you know, the commercial guys, they think one thing. The recreational fishermen think another thing. The charter boat guys think another thing. And we just, you know, it's one species that is the most intensely managed species. And unfortunately, emotion doesn't figure into the science of it.
Well, and
or maybe fortunately.
Yeah. Well, and the thing is, again, we're trying to do the right thing. You know, people that work at ASMSC, they're trying to do the right thing. You know, people's emotions do. You know, again, what you know, their perceptions, and it isn't always. You know, people say, "Well, I know this is a fact. This is what I've seen." But you know, if you talk to 100 other people, you may get 100 other views, or you may get 50 other views, but you're going to have, you know, you're going to get different views and just, you know,
yeah.
Again, we're trying to look at
sure.
it objectively and you know, the scientists, you know, the people that are getting up at 2:30, 3 o'clock in the morning to go out in the field. I mean, they're doing this because they want to, you know, they like the work, they like the job, but they're trying to do the right thing. And if that's what you have to do in order to be out there sampling at the right time, that's what you do.
Yeah.
And there's people up down the East Coast that are doing that, you know, getting up.
Let me just boil it all down to the user groups. There's no great conspiracy out there to pit one group against the other. And what would the gain be from that?
Right.
None.
And it's just, it is frustrating, and maybe I'll get on my soapbox here. I mean, you know, people say, oh, you know, DNR is getting paid off by this group, or DNR is, you know, accepting favors from that group. And it's like, nobody's, I mean, we're trying to do the right thing here. We're trying to manage this population
right.
so that everybody can have their fair share.
Right.
And if you look at it on even Maryland or on a coastal basis, you know, that everybody involved, not just, you know, Maryland biologists, but everybody, the politicians, the administrators, you know, and then people outside, you know, the National Marine Fisheries Service people, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service people, ASMSC. I mean, everybody's worked hard to try to manage this and make it available to the public.
Right, exactly.
Really,
no question about it.
We're trying to do.
No question about it. And, you know, 20 years, almost 20 years since the moratorium was over, we still got a great fishery out there. We've got, you know, tons of fish. We got fish that are successfully spawning despite all the obstacles. We got people that are paying attention to those fish. We've got, you know, all of it to provide recreational opportunities, all of it to provide commercial opportunities. People like to catch them. People like to eat them. And if you don't like to catch them and you don't like to eat them, don't go.
Yeah, or just catch and release. I mean,
people catch and release. You can do that too.
Still do
catch
that
and release.
And
yep.
Have a good time and experience something that, I mean, this time of year when people are out, and if you look and see some of the pictures the biologists are taking, I mean, there's some very unique opportunities to see fish that you wouldn't normally see.
Sure.
And it's just is really neat. It's just a good time of year to be outside too.
Exactly.
But you just never know what you're going to see out there. And
are you worn out yet?
Oh, no, I'm good. So, you know, again, some of the folks that are out there, I mean, you got to give them credit because, like I said, they are getting up at, and this is up in, you know, this is down in Virginia, this is up in New York State, you know, they haven't started yet, but, you know, people will be getting up in the middle of the night to, you know, to hit that right tide. You know,
sure, absolutely.
That's time to sample you know, and they're cold, they're wet, but, you know, they're measuring fish, they're taking data, and that data will come back, and end up at ASMFC for those folks to to summarize and look at and try to manage fishery the best that they can.
Well, let's just end it on this, Harry. You guys are out there. You're working hard for all the user groups. You're working hard for the recreational guy. You're just you got a dedicated core of people that are dedicated to the sustainability of striped bass here in the Chesapeake Bay and on the East Coast. And you have my applause, and hopefully the applause of the audience here. I don't know if you can hear them, but there's people out there that are just cheering you on right now. And so we want to thank you for joining us this morning. And
I got to put in. Can I put in a plug?
Sure, put in a plug.
Put in a plug for Natural Resource Police. I mean, those guys are out there too.
Yep.
They're doing a job that has to be done. They're
right.
Doing a job that, when people see us, there may be some confusion, but we're biologists. We're just we're measuring
right.
fish. But when they see those guys, they're like, oh no! And it's like, you know what? They're doing their job. They believe in their job. They have to be out there to they're part of this management process
sure.
too. And I just say to people, hey. If you're behaving, you're fine.
You're fine.
They're nice
sure.
people. They're interested in natural resources too.
Yep.
Just they're doing an important job.
All right.
So, yeah.
You got your plug.
All right.
And we appreciate you being with us there, Harry Hornick from Maryland Department of Natural Resources, and we've got the guy that runs the striped bass program, and you heard it here first, folks. So, Harry, thanks again for joining us.
Oh, you're very welcome. Thanks for having us.
All righty. Take care.
Yeah. You too. Bye bye.
Bye bye. Time for me to tell you about Clyde Sports Shop, 2307 Hammonds Ferry Road in Lansdowne, just off Beltway Exit 9. Everything you need for striped bass, everything you need for turkey season. We'll just end it like that and say, hey, look, we've got everything. I keep saying everything. I'm not going to say everything. We've got at Clyde Sports Shop. They've got bucktails. They've got all the trolling lures. They've got all the turkey ammo. They've got all the turkey shotguns. They've got the great Browning shotguns that we talked about before, the BPS.